Meeting will come to order.
We had a little bit of a technical difficulty this morning, so we're starting a couple minutes late, but we got all that figured out. Thank you. You did a wonderful job. Members, first item of business, we do need to have somebody look over and approve the minutes. We have Representative Torkelson moves the minutes dated Tuesday, January 25th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the agenda today, members, we do have the University of Minnesota. The dean's coming in to talk to us about that, giving us an update. We also have members from the Morrow program. We want to make sure that we have plenty of time to bring them down. I have some good friends coming up and testifying, so we might have to share a few stories as well. I'm just teasing. Got to prepare you there, Joel. And with that, I believe we can roll right into this. If we could bring the deans from the University of Minnesota up. And members, what we would like to do today is we have quite a bit of information to cover. And to keep this thing rolling through with the university, what we ask is we hold our questions to the end. Let's go through the presentations, and then there will be time allowed for questions after the deans had a chance to present their information. And with that, if you would please state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed.
Sure, Hamilton Committee. My name is Bev Durgan. I'm Dean of University of Minnesota Extension and Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station.
Good morning, Chairman Hamilton. I'm Trevor Ames, Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine.
Good morning. I don't have a voice. I'm Alan Levine. I'm the Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that you have a copy of our presentation available to you, so if you don't, just let us know. We can make sure that you get that. It is a pleasure for me to be here today with my two colleagues, Dean Levine and Dean Ames, to talk about research, education, and extension at the University of Minnesota. All of you know, and especially those of you sitting here on this committee, know that agriculture is a bright spot in the state's economy right now. It's the second largest employer in Minnesota when you consider production agriculture and then all of agriculture with the processing, handling, and supply of food. Every agricultural production job in the state supports an additional 1.5 jobs in other sectors of Minnesota. We also know that agriculture is a large driver of the economy in Minnesota. Over $15 billion in crops and livestock sales in the state, over $5 billion of exports out of Minnesota every year in agricultural exports. Minnesota is the sixth largest agricultural producer in the U.S., and it's the seventh largest agricultural exporter in the U.S. So again, agriculture is an important sector of Minnesota's economy. And we're very pleased to be here today to talk to you about how the University of Minnesota supports agriculture and the rural economy of Minnesota. The Agricultural State Special funds a portion of the work that all of our three colleges do. Our research and extension is conducted on the St. Paul campus, but it's also conducted throughout the state of Minnesota. And you can see on the map the various research and extension locations that we have throughout the state. The Ag State Special leverages money from other sources in the forms of grants, gifts, and contracts, and it leverages anywhere, depending on the year, from 5 to 10%, 5 to 10 times the amount of money that the Ag State Special does. And that money then is generated by our faculty to support the work that they do in agriculture in the state. The state special is used to increase production and protect our food supply, and also it is used to create economic activity in every county within the state. Just a little background on the Agricultural State Special. I think many of you are familiar with the state special. It is a special line in the University of Minnesota's budget, and it is split into two parts. 65% of the Ag State Special goes to the Agricultural Experiment Station to support research, and 35% of the Ag State Special goes to the University of Minnesota to support University of Minnesota Extension to support applied research and extension within Extension. So what I'd like to do today, what all of us would like to do today, is just talk about some of the programs that are funded by the Ag State Special and other funding that we have that supports agriculture in the state and also the rural economy. Just to talk a little bit about the funding of the Ag State Special, the Ag State Special funding is tied to the funding within the state. As you can see in this bar graph, what we had an increase in the state's Ag State Special in 2008 and 2009, but due to the current budget challenges that the state has, that we did see a decrease in the state special at the end of the last legislative session. And currently, the biennial funding for the Ag State Special is the lowest that it's been since 1990. So that just gives you some background on the funding of the state special. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the work that the Agricultural Experiment Station and Extension does to support agriculture in the state. As I mentioned earlier, Minnesota is a large exporter of agricultural products, soybeans being a lead in that export and other grain products. The University of Minnesota is the lead on a nationwide study on the quality and supply of soybeans within both Minnesota and the U.S. This study is used then to encourage exporters to export our soybeans, and it is one of the number one reasons why we're seeing some increases in exports of soybeans. Also, some recent research that's been conducted by faculty extension and research faculty at the U of M with distiller grains by product of ethanol, and that has increased, and there's an increase in demand for exports of these DDGs, primarily to Australia right now. Also, the University of Minnesota soybean varieties are helping with food grade soybeans that are part of that overall export market in soybeans. Next, the University of Minnesota is fortunate to have some state-of-the-art research facilities. We are the only land-grant university that has both an insect quarantine facility for plants and a plant pathogen quarantine facility. Both of these facilities were funded in part with state money. The insect facility has helped us develop control plans for major insects such as the soybean aphid, for buckthorn, and also garlic mustard control. And the plant pathology facility is helping us develop varieties for resistance of UG99 stem rust, a major disease that is threatening the wheat crop throughout the U.S., Asian soybean rust, and the sudden oat death. Part of the Ag State Special money is used to develop varieties that are used from growers throughout the state. We have a new wheat variety that's high yielding, high protein, and high disease resistant. We also have a new barley variety. Our soybean varieties are used both in conventional agriculture and also organic agriculture. And many of you are familiar with our horticultural variety releases, our apples, our grapes, and our hardy shrubs. And our grape, we've released three cold hardy grape varieties that are supporting the grape industry in the state. We now have over 33 vineyards and wineries in Minnesota that are located throughout the state, and really is an economic boom to those areas with these wineries. So we're really proud of those releases. Also, the University of Minnesota, we have a commitment to the water quality in the state. Our research and extension programs run the range of drainage and how to manage drainage, how to fertilize crops, and also we have some new research on salt-tolerant turf that is being used on roadsides and also on boulevards to decrease runoff of salt applications, especially years like we see this year with all the snow. Dairy is another important agricultural industry in the state, and as you know that our dairy producers are struggling a little bit more than our crop producers are in this state economy. So we're working hard with those producers to provide financial information. Dr. Ames will talk a little bit about what is happening in veterinary medicine, working on disease control, and also working very closely with Minnesota Milk Association and Department of Ag to support this major industry in the state. Also, pork production is an important industry in the state. We work closely together, the three colleges support this industry, and as I mentioned, that our faculty are very good at receiving grants to support their work. We've just received a large National Institute for Food and Agriculture federal grant to work on sow welfare and hunger, and again, leveraging those Ag State Special funds to bring additional funds into the state. The University of Minnesota has had a long-standing commitment to financial providing financial expertise to our growers. We work with banks and other producers for that financial packages to manage their finances. We also have a very successful program called Winning the Game, helping growers to be better marketers of their crops. And our Center for Farm Financial Management is a leading center in the nation of providing financial expertise to growers. Extension also, not only do we support production agriculture, but we have a deep commitment to communities throughout Minnesota. One project that has been funded by the Northwest Area Foundation is called the Horizons Program. The Horizon Programs works with small towns and communities that have at least 10% poverty within their communities. This program really is helping communities determine what their future is going to be to keep their residents in the communities and keep their businesses in the communities. Also, there's lots of conversation about developing new jobs, but we also think it's just important to retain the jobs that we have now. Our business support and expansion program has worked with over 60 communities to really work with the businesses that they have in those communities, keeping those businesses there and expanding those businesses on Main Street in rural Minnesota. I'd say just a little bit about organic and sustainable agriculture. We also have a strong commitment in both of those areas. Our dairy herd at West Central Research and Outreach Center, part of that has been converted to an organic dairy. The University of Minnesota soybean varieties have enabled Minnesota to be the leading producer of organic soybeans and also in exports. And also we have developed and working closely with other agencies on our farm school programs, connecting farmers with school districts. And as was mentioned earlier by Chair Hamilton, is that we do have a strong commitment to building human capacity in Minnesota and our commitment to leadership programs. Our Morrow Group is here today. It's one of our flagship leadership programs, really training leaders of tomorrow. We have leadership programs in River Valley. We work with other agencies. And then, of course, one of our long-standing leadership programs is our 4-H Youth Development Programs. 4-H is a program that is throughout the state. Currently, we have over 126,000 youth involved in our youth programs. Our 4-H Club program is increasing every year and has increased by 24% since 2004. We have a new program to support military families called Operation Military Kids to help those kids coping with parents that are being deployed overseas. And also our Center for Youth Development has trained over 4,300 youth workers in the state. These are youth workers that work for Boys and Girls Clubs, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, about good youth development practices. Finally, we also have funding within the Ag State Special that we can use to respond to crises, rural and ag crises in the state. We call that the Rapid Agricultural Response Fund. This money has been used to combat many of the diseases that we've had in both plants and animals, also dairy and swine, and improving crop production. And finally, in closing, I'd also like to say that the Ag State Special then provides the base funding that Extension has for responding to disasters throughout the state. We are there when we see disasters such as floods and rains and drought, and with all the conversations about flooding in the Red River Valley this year, we're already working with state agencies to develop the plan of what's going to happen when that happens. So with that, I would like to close today and let my colleagues take over. I want to thank you again for your support and look forward to conversations afterwards. Thank you.
We do have a couple members that raised some questions. I know we said at the beginning of this that we were going to wait until the end, but Representative Morrow, I think you have to step out to attend another meeting. So would it be okay to take one question from Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Chair Hamilton. That's gracious. Yes, my daughter's college interview was rescheduled to 11, and I apologize. None of us are very happy about that. But Chair Hamilton, maybe I'll just pass the question to you, and you can ask at the end. I know that I believe there's between $3 and $4 million in disaster relief money from the floods that's still unobligated in the Department of Ag's budget. And I just want to know if these testifiers can tell us what's happening with that $4 million. Is that $4 million going to be obligated because we're going to be hearing a bill later today about zeroing out all unobligated funds. So I believe it's $3.8 to $3.9 million that's in the Department of Ag's budget. But since we were talking about flood relief, it'd be good for all of us on the committee to know what happens if that line item is zeroed out. And I can wait. That can be asked at the end. If you would ask it, that'd be great.
Well, how about we'll save that. We'll save that question and answer it at the end, and that way we have it on record as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Representative Morrow. Please proceed.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Sorry about the voice. I planned it this way, right?
So we'll go easy on you today.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much. So our college, the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resources Sciences, came together when I became the dean. It was a new college that merged from a number of colleges. And our focus areas that we've attended to include food and health and agricultural systems, the protection of the food system, bioeconomy, how we use our farm products for economic value, global climate change, environmental change associated with agricultural issues, as well as biodiversity. Our college came together from natural resources, a college that had ag and environmental sciences, and then a department that moved over from the College of Human Ecology that was shared before. In any event, we have 11 academic departments, we have 30-plus campus-based interdisciplinary centers, and we have 9 centers around the state. These research and outreach centers are very important because we live in 3 biomes. We have different soil types, we have different cropping systems and livestock systems. So it's very valuable. As you heard from Dean Durgan, the organic dairy at Morris, we couldn't do those types of things without having these facilities that are very rich and shared by all of us. As far as the college itself, in terms of agricultural literacy and education of the public, we have 1,850 undergrads, we have 14 majors and 22 minors, so we're pretty diverse, with 700 graduate students and 13 graduate programs. And those 13 graduate programs have 5 interdisciplinary programs that go across the university. We have a lot of faculty, around 240 faculty. Half of those faculty, half of those FTEs are devoted to research. And these folks have leveraged the Ag State Special Funds in a major way. We have $75 million in competitive grants currently, which creates somewhere around 600 jobs to the state, a very important number. We get our money from competitive agencies. The USDA only funded 5 to 10% of the grants, so that tells you we're doing all right. The National Science Foundation, the National Institute of Health, as well as the state and various associations and commodity groups. So you can see that we have a diverse portfolio, but the Ag State Special really holds us together on that. Across the years, we've had more students in our college. The majors, animal science is our most populated major, followed by nutrition, followed by environmental sciences, economics. So we have a growth in our population of students. We had more entry this year than other years. And we also try to work on leadership. I mean, we can brag about the fact that the university has had 4 Princess K's. It's a good thing. It's leadership development. We want that agricultural picture coming out across the state. You can see 4 of our 6 state officers were U of M students in FFA. So we work on leadership as well during this educational programs. The students surveyed in 2009 demonstrated it's a good place to get your degree. 83% of students of our students found a job within 6 months of graduating. My son's a violinist. That did not happen to him. 76% of the jobs related to these major to their majors, and the mean salary was $36,000. That's a pretty decent portfolio to bring forward. So we believe that we have a unique opportunity to build strength and workforce for the state in these areas. We are very interested in maintaining the food supply and protecting the food supply. All of us are involved. All of the deans at this table are involved in responses to various foodborne illness, including E. coli. We have scientists that are working in extension programs, teaching folks how to handle food. And the National Center for Food Protection and Defense, which is located in the College of Veterinary Medicine, Trevor Ames' college, we have collaboration with that as well. So we have a great deal of effort in the area of food protection, monitoring food. We have engineers who monitor the food, take a look at the shelf life of that food. We also have a food industry center in our applied economics department. That center works closely with the food industry and does a lot of work on marketing and benefits to that industry. We also have a great deal of insight and work in the area of health. We were fortunate enough to get from the president an initiative for Healthy Foods, Healthy Lives. It helps fund research in the area of health and foods, and it's across the university. Also, our university is one of the centers in the country for, we're only four of, across the country, of National Institute of Health funded obesity centers, or 15, there's 15 nutrition centers, and we focus on that as well, childhood obesity, obesity during pregnancy, and obesity throughout the life cycle. Dr. Durgan already mentioned all of these things around rust. We've been working heartily on genomics across the last 5 to 10 years and have worked on different breeds, and you heard about UG99, a very important part. We have an endowed professorship that does collaborative work with Israel on wild wheat, where you can take a look at the resistance genes that are present there. And now we've moved on to not only doing genomics and proteomics, but an area known as metabolomics, which should help us produce better livestock and plants in terms of resistance to disease, productivity, and healthy foods. This year it was pretty exciting. Marla Spivak, who works at our college and is also an extension, does a lot of outreach work, works on bees, bee health, and she got the MacArthur Genius Award this year, which was spectacularly important to the university, to all of us. We know that our food supply is very dependent on bee pollination. Everyone knows that. We've also funded some research in the area of propolis, which is an ingredient in honey that has antimicrobial properties that can even prevent AIDS growth in the in a petri plate. So we were very thrilled about that. We're one in the five-state area. We're the only state that has a bee laboratory. And Marla Spivak tells me the reason she's here is because bees come back to this area of the country to get healthy. And she doesn't care if it's Minnesota or North Dakota or where it is. They get healthy in this area. I mentioned the durable rust wheat already. The Borlaug Rust Initiative, we've worked with the Cornell Project on this. And we're breeding wheat for resistance to race issues and identifying resistance in cultivated and wild barley as well. Let's see. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. That's what's going on. We're doing a great deal of work in ethanol and biodiesel products, biomass systems and economics, and building conservation carbon credits in wind systems. This whole area, we hired a series of scientists who are fungal microbiologists, fungal biologists, who take a look at the lignocellular component, the woody part of trees, to make fuel from that. And we've hired a number of those people that are in our engineering group. And finally, I'd like to say that we're trying to put wind to work. We've just built this new facility. It's getting ready to start its primary work at Morris, Minnesota, at our research and outreach center in Morris, where we're using techniques that can convert hydrogen and make anhydrous ammonia from it. So imagine that. That would be a wonderful thing to turn. What you're doing is turning wind into anhydrous ammonia. So that's to give you a very broad and quick overview of our college. And I think at this point, I will introduce my colleague, Dean Ames.
Please, Dr. Ames, proceed.
Thanks, Al. Thanks, Chairman Hamilton and committee members, for this opportunity to come here and tell you a little bit about the College of Veterinary Medicine and about some of our research. I see I get to use the keyboard after Dean Levine has been touching it.
I don't know if we have any sanitary wipes or anything in the room, but
I'll just take my time.
I apologize for that.
I know I speak for all of the deans when I tell you that we're all strong supporters of agriculture in Minnesota and that we care greatly about the success of the producers in the state. As a college at a land-grant university, we think of it as our mission to ensure that there are healthier animals, a healthier economy, and healthier Minnesotans within the state. And as has been alluded to by Dean Durgan, we do have a vibrant agricultural economy in this state. There are a lot of animals in this state, and through the work at the College of Veterinary Medicine, we hope to be able to limit production-limiting diseases in livestock, diseases that limit our markets, and diseases that decrease demand for our products, and also diseases affecting wildlife and companion animals. And hopefully by dealing with these diseases, we can protect the livestock industry and the jobs that are associated with it, as well as improve animal welfare. The college also plays an important role in the area of food safety, ensuring that the products that go to market are free of disease, conducting biomedical research using animal models for human disease. A lot of this is spontaneously occurring models that occur in companion animals, and prevention of diseases that are transmitted from animals to humans. And also by keeping our companion animals and wildlife healthy, we believe that that enhances our physical and psychological well-being. If the governor keeps challenging members of the media to swallow minnows, that will probably create a new food challenge for us to deal with. So, our college trains veterinarians. We have a four-year program that most of the students entering our program already have a college degree or at least 3 years. And then following graduation, many of our graduates go on for additional training, either through interns or residencies or graduate school. Most of the veterinarians that work in Minnesota are graduates of our school. We do have a challenge maintain accreditation, that we have to train veterinary students in all species. And that becomes a significant challenge, especially in the area of food animals, which I'll touch on in a minute. We, together with the School of Public Health, offer a combined DVM-MPH program, and 53 of our 381 veterinary students are working on two degrees at once. They're a highly motivated bunch. And in addition, there are about 60 students from other veterinary schools that are using our MPH program to also get this joint degree as well. We do have graduate programs at the Veterinary College and have about 83 graduate students currently enrolled in our programs. I mentioned the challenge of getting adequate food animal training for our students. And we have gone to a public-private partnership model with existing farms and train our students on these teaching and research farms. It provides access to full-scale, commercially operated farms. It is the kind of facility that is very difficult to replicate on a university campus. Our students can be closely integrated into the routine activities, the full scale of activities that occur on an agricultural operation. And they get access to all stages of the operation, all stages of production, and are involved in all the forms of treatment and diagnosis going on in those farms. But most importantly, on any given day when our students are on these farms, there is adequate, more than adequate, educational materials for them to learn from. And the facility that we have at New Sweden in partnership with Davis Family Farms is probably the one that's best known. This facility has educational research and treatment capabilities that provide the scale and quality that allow it to also be a major center for continuing education for veterinarians and other dairy professionals, as well as our veterinary students. And since it's opened in the fall of 2008, we've put on over 20 three-day educational modules for veterinarians at this facility. I think everyone is aware of the challenges of meeting the need for food animal veterinarians in rural America, rural Minnesota. And there was a large study that was conducted looking at this, and it made recommendations. It said that colleges needed to do a better job of recruiting, mentoring, training, and incentivizing students to go into food animal practice. Together with the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, we have one of the oldest and most successful early admissions program for food animal students. We had 23 students apply last fall, and the students that entered our freshman class this past fall, we had 10 students entering our freshman class, and we're hoping to see that continue to grow. So these students are from rural Minnesota. They've been trained. They have a strong food animal background. They've been trained in the Department of Animal Science, they have a commitment to work on food animals after they graduate. We also use an admission process that's not just grades. We use a behavioral interview that gives these rural kids a chance to show their great communication skills. And we mentor these kids. We orient them about food animals. We have them do food animal projects throughout their career at the veterinary school. And then they train at these teaching farms, so they get the training that allows them to be successful in these rural communities after they graduate. The Minnesota Veterinary Rural Loan Forgiveness Program went into law in 2009 and has provided funding for veterinarians working on food animals in rural Minnesota. It's a great incentive program for students to go into these communities, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get that funding renewed for this biennium as well. We also, as I mentioned, train a lot of public health veterinarians through our DVM MPH program, as well as we have a residency program. And this is very important. These public health veterinarians have many important roles to play in government, both state and federal, in dealing with food safety issues, dealing with new, unusual, emerging diseases, dealing with proper antibiotic use, and dealing with diseases that can move back and forth between animals and humans. And as I mentioned, our large program with the School of Public Health, we train more veterinary public health professionals than the rest of the nation combined. Our research programs really focus in three main areas under sort of an our overarching umbrella that we call One Science, One Medicine. Comparative medicine, as I mentioned earlier, is this concept of using spontaneous or naturally occurring diseases in humans in animals to study diseases that affect both animals and humans. And we have a large study of brain tumors in dogs that's an excellent example of this. The college has a long history with infectious disease research, these diseases that limit production and limit markets. We also have a focus on what we call population systems that deals with livestock health, ecosystem health, and food systems. And as Dean Levine mentioned, we're home to the National Center for Food Protection and Defense, and together with CFANS, the Vet School, and Public Health, we're all working to help protect the nation's food supply. Our increased research expenditures over the last 2 years have moved us up to fifth in the nation of veterinary schools, and as Dean Durgan mentioned, like the other parts of the college and the University of Minnesota dealing with agriculture, we're able to leverage these research dollars into much larger state and federal and private funding. The dollars that we get from the Agricultural Experiment Station and from Rapid Ag Response Funds are very important dollars to do preliminary research, very applied research, or research dealing with problems only affecting our area. These dollars, again, can be used to get preliminary data that can be then used to go after these larger grants that we've alluded to. In the case of, you can see that there's a number of important diseases that we've used these dollars to work on, but I'll talk about a couple, avian metapneumovirus and porcine reproductive respiratory virus, or PRRS virus. The college has worked on these viruses. We've identified the causative agent. We've developed diagnostic tests. We've developed control programs. And we've developed the vaccines that are used to help in these control programs. So with avian metapneumovirus, the poultry industry will tell you that while it's not eradicated, it's largely disappeared, and that by it being largely gone, it saves that industry $15 million a year. In the case of PRRS virus, the College of Veterinary Medicine still owns the patent for vaccine production for this disease, And we are now leading the nation on developing a program to eradicate this disease. And we're piloting a regional eradication program in western Minnesota. And Dr. D, one of our researchers that works on this disease, who actually left swine practice to come back to the University of Minnesota to tackle this disease, was recently featured on the National Hog Farmer for his work in industry-leading research to help eliminate this disease. And I want to just emphasize that much of the testing that was done, that is done for these large-scale studies looking at animal populations, the testing for this is done in our veterinary diagnostic lab. The Veterinary College owns a number of service units or business units that it operates. The one that would be of greatest interest to this committee is the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. This is really the equivalent of the state's health department lab, but it's for animals. It's housed in the veterinary school rather than in a state government building. But it's the official state lab for animal postmortems and other animal testing. And we do a significant amount of state and federal testing that is needed to ensure that our animals and animal products have access to international markets. We also have a Center for Animal Health and Food Safety that does a lot of state and federal contract work, like disease modeling around foot and mouth disease outbreaks. We have a Raptor Center that does a lot of work on injured raptors, but probably more importantly, it uses that work as a platform to talk to over 200,000 people a year about important environmental impacts on our wildlife. Our Veterinary Medical Center continues to be the busiest teaching hospital in the nation. It has a very large caseload, which gives our comparative medicine researchers many cases of naturally occurring disease to do clinical trials with. And our veterinary outreach programs, in conjunction with the Minnesota Extension Service, provide training to veterinarians and other professionals, as well as animal owners, to on a number of important topics that are listed on this slide. So I want to just close by talking a little bit more about our veterinary diagnostic lab. As I alluded to, it performs many tests, over 1.3 million tests a year. And most of these tests are to help veterinarians and producers make management decisions surrounding production-limiting diseases, like I've talked about with PRRS virus or with mastitis in dairy cattle. But the lab also performs tests that only an official accredited lab can do, such as TB testing, to ensure that our export markets are preserved. The lab also supports the work of the DNR and does testing for diseases like viral hemorrhagic septicemia in freshwater fish, or chronic wasting disease, or tuberculosis in deer and elk. And the diagnostic lab was the lab that performed the diagnosis on the recent announcement of chronic wasting disease in deer in southern Minnesota. The diagnostic lab also helps the Minnesota Department of Health. It's the official electron microscope site for the Department of Health. And when the Department of Health was investigating the problem of pork plant workers in Austin, Minnesota, they wanted to confirm that they didn't have a swine disease. They went to the National Veterinary Services Lab run by USDA in Ames, Iowa, asked if they could help. They said, no, we can't help. But the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Lab ran 300 samples, throat swabs, and serum samples. We figured out a way to get that done. It was the first time that we'd run human samples in the diagnostic lab. So we provided that service to the state to help with that investigation. I'm happy to tell you that they weren't infected by any swine or known swine pathogens and actually had an immune-mediated condition. So the diagnostic lab does a whole battery of tests every day to support animal agriculture and food safety, but it does face an important funding challenge. Because it is a state lab located at the University of Minnesota, it creates a funding challenge, and the university has been using stimulus funds to help support that funding challenge, but those are going to run out this year, and so there will need to be increased support for the diagnostic lab if we're going to be able to continue to do the excellent work it does to support the state. So I'll just conclude for all three presenters to say that the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences, the Minnesota Extension Service, the Agricultural Experiment Station, and the College of Veterinary Medicine are all dedicated to help the agricultural economy by educating a workforce, protecting ag production, and providing research-based information. So thank you again for this opportunity for all of us to present, tell you a little bit about what we do, and I know that we'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Well, thank you. We do have a number of questions. How about we start with Representative Morrow's question about the $4 million on disaster relief. Would anybody like to field that one at this time? Or?
Chair Hamilton, I was mentioned that money resides within the Department of Agriculture. Extension has worked with them, but that will have to be a question that you'll have to ask them.
All right. Thank you very much. First, we have Representative Anderson, Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this probably goes to Dean Durgan. You mentioned conservation, that you work in that area. And I've had people, geohydrologists, ask me about the concerns in the wildlife area of the salt that the state of Minnesota puts down on their roads, and particularly as it goes into swamps that are adjacent to roadways, and how it affects the population of ducks in the flyway that used to be Mississippi Flyway for ducks here in Minnesota. Now it's kind of moved to the western side of Minnesota and probably into the Dakotas. And I'm just wondering if you've done any type of evaluation or any type of investigation as to how salt affects the swamp, and especially in my area. We have a big Pelican Lake that used to be huge with ducks and now has diminished quite substantially, and I'm just looking for, and I have a follow-up.
Dean Durgan.
Chair Hamilton, a representative. I am going to pass that one over to Dean Levine. Within his college is the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife that also does some of that work. So, Al, if you wouldn't mind answering that
Dean
question.
Levine.
Mr. Chair. Maybe I can talk. We have several people who are working in this area, but there isn't a tremendous amount of funds towards that for the research, so much of it is done on the back of other funding. And I haven't seen a great deal of focus on that at the moment. I haven't heard much of it.
Follow-up, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's mentioned, I don't know if it was in Dr. Ames' presentation about the food animal vet shortage that we were talking about, and that sounded like you were making a pitch from the University of Minnesota out to the school districts in the state, kind of encouraging those who are involved with agriculture if they're interested. And I'm just wondering if you do have participants in the junior, senior high that people are interested in going into veterinary medicine, and that you dip down into those local school districts and say, you know, here's kind of a preliminary to what you could expect if you were to come to the University of Minnesota in regards to veterinary medicine.
Dean Ames.
Thank you, Chairman Hamilton. Actually, it's through our partnership with the College of Agriculture and the Department of Animal Science that we're able to do that. So when they go out to the schools to talk about joining their college as an undergrad, one of the things they can talk about is that if you're interested in veterinary medicine and you come to the St. Paul campus, that so basically the way the program works is that if they're in the top 25% of their class, and if they have a ACT score of over 26, they enter in the College of Agriculture. If they have a GPA of over 3.4 in their fall semester within the College of Agriculture and Animal Science, then we'll take a look at them. And so for a lot of rural kids coming to the big city, to the big U, they look at that and they go, I could do that. And so it seems like a pathway that's open to them. They then have to do mentored food animal experiences. There are two summers before they get into vet school, and their first two summers within vet school, they have to maintain a 3.4 GPA while they're in the Department of Animal Science, working on their animal science major, and then they just they move into veterinary schools. So they've been given provisional acceptance. So long as they meet those criteria, then they can move into the college. And they have to go through the interview process as well, and they usually do that in spring semester of their freshman year as well. But then they're given provisional acceptance, and so long as they fulfill those that agreement, they can come in. So we have this growing cadre of pre-veterinary students that are, we call them VetFast, Veterinary Food Animal Scholarship Track, that are in animal science. Then we have the group of them that are in the vet school that came through that program. And so those students do go out and talk in high schools. And this year, the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association wants to fund what they call Vet Camp at a lot of rural county fairs, where we use those students as well as practitioners in the area to get the word out to a greater degree. So when we go to fill our class this spring, we'll look and we'll say, how many VetFast students do we have? And if we have 10 or 12 or 20, then we say, okay, then we only have 90 slots or 80 slots left for the other students. So that's how we use that program. So I think I'm giving you a long answer. I'm kind of proud of the program, but I think it's been successful in giving these rural kids a chance to get into veterinary school. They can see that as a pathway that's successful for them. And then the other one factor I want to mention is that the single biggest predictor of whether someone will go back to a rural community is if they're from a rural community.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Ames, is there a deviation from the standards, the criteria? You mentioned an ACT score of 26. And I know of history, young people who had a lower score of that and have, based on an oral test or some other type of a medium by which they were able to prove that, don't hold me back just because my ACT doesn't meet this criteria. And I'm just wondering if you do any type of a variation of that, because I've seen people excel because of their excitement about being involved with something like that.
Dr. Ames.
Thank you, Chairman Hamilton. Those are the criteria that we developed in conjunction with the Department of Animal Science. So we sort of look at that as a floor. We use the interview process as a way of those students, you know, demonstrating their ability. There is a reality that they are going to have to get through both the undergraduate curriculum and the veterinary school curriculum. And there is an analogy that getting through veterinary school is like drinking out of a fire hose. We pour a lot of information on them. And so I think that that's a baseline that they're going to need in order to succeed. For other, you know, parts, there's other colleges, undergraduate programs that have, you know, now their ACTs are up over 30 to get in. So I think that, anyway, that's the one we're using.
Next question, Representative Paul Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment, the diagnostic lab certainly plays a key role in our state's livestock industry, so we need to maintain the funding for that lab, and thank you for your work. Dr. Ames, just a quick question. You mentioned that one of your, I believe, swine vaccines, you still held a patent on it. Does that mean it's a revenue source for the university?
Yes, it is. We do share the patent with University of South Dakota and with the vaccine manufacturing company, but it's a very unusual situation that for some reason or other that particular virus will only grow on one unique cell line, and as much as every other vaccine company in the world would like to find another cell line so that they didn't have to pay the royalties, that continues to be a revenue source for the college.
Follow up, Representative Anderson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On another subject, I believe Dean Dorgan mentioned insect control of some problem weeds in my pasture, and I usually found that a chainsaw and Tordon was the best thing to control buckthorn. Is there an easier insect control of buckthorn?
Dean Dorgan.
Chair Hamilton, Representative. Yes, we are working on biological control of buckthorn. So that is an insect. That is an insect that we have brought over from Eurasia, Asia, and released it on buckthorn. So it is, you know, biological control generally doesn't eradicate the pest, but it keeps it under control. So, yeah, as you know, even cutting and tordon helps for a while. But we hope that we could get this biological control agent established so it will keep populations below economic levels. And so it has been released in a couple sites in Minnesota. The main thing that we worry about is overwintering and whether it can stand our winter. So you'll be hearing more about that in the future.
And always read and follow label directions, right? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one comment, but question, but I wanted to go back to Representative Anderson, Bruce Anderson's point about, you know, kids receiving some, students, not kids, 9th through 12th grade high school students receiving some hands-on kind of experience. And I see in the slide it talks about tackling the food, the animal veterinarian shortage, where you talk about experiential education. And experiential education is just that. It's a hands-on kind of experience for young people. And as a previous educator that taught a class called service learning, I put my students out in many veterinarian clinics and egg kind of facilities in hopes that they would have a great experience and then continue in that. And it has. I still have students come back to me and say, "Mr. Ward, you know, I'm a veterinarian assistant because of what I learned in service learning." So, unfortunately, those are some of the things that we lose early when we have budget shortages, and it's so sad that we don't provide those hands-on kind of experiential education things that Representative Anderson was referring to continually. Now to my question that I had initially, you also stay in that same. On the loan forgiveness, it says that the loan forgiveness program has provided funding for 3 Minnesota veterinarians. Can you tell us where those are?
Dean Ames. Yeah, Dr. Ames, please.
Chairman Hamilton. The program was put into law in 2009, so there was an application process. It was handled by the Health and Human Services, because they handle all of the loan forgiveness programs for the medical profession. And so we were able to have funding for 3 veterinarians. The way the funding was structured was they would get $15,000 a year for up to 5 years if they stayed in a rural community working more than half their time on food animals. That 5-year payout was based on research that shows that if veterinarians stay in a rural community working on food animals for more than 5 years, they're far, far more likely to continue to stay in that community. And interesting enough, they have the highest job satisfaction of any part of the profession. So to answer specifically your question, we didn't have any qualified applicants north of Interstate 94. So the people that reviewed the applicants just chose the 3 best applicants. The 3 best ended up being in Pipestone, Windham, and Harmony.
Representative Ward?
Can you tell us, thank you, Mr. Chair. Why was that? Why was it that there was no, do you have any speculations why that was, that there was nobody north of, what did you say, I-94?
Dr. Yeah. Ames.
Part of the way the program was structured, it was structured for people that were within a few years of graduation, because it wouldn't, even though people that have been out for more than 5 years may still be carrying student loans, that it, if they're still in a rural community, they're probably going to stay there. So I'm not sure it would be good use of government dollars to pay people that have been out for a number of years. So it was aimed at recent grads, and so it may be that that's where the majority of recent grads just happened to go, that that's where the jobs were for those particular years. And I should add that the federal government also has a program that finally went into effect, and so they funded 62 veterinarians across the United States, and 2 or 3 of those were in Minnesota. And I do not know where those were.
And members, that was a bill that was carried by Chair Otremba the last legislative session, I believe. Representative Mary Ellen Otremba carried that. And we are working on drafting a bill, too. So, Representative Ward, if you're interested, I'd like to visit with you on that as well. Next question, Representative Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dean Durgan, you'd talked about the role that the university plays in responding to disasters, and I'm glad to hear it sounds like also preparing for potential disasters, as in the case of potential flooding in the Red River Valley, which I represent a portion of. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit about the role that you play in working with the state agencies and helping prepare for the possibility of flooding this spring.
So, Dean Durgan.
Mr. Hamilton, Representative. Our role really is, one of the first things we want to do is make sure that we work with the other agencies in the area, so we don't want to duplicate efforts. But we work in the areas that where we have the expertise. One, as a small example, is that we've worked with NDSU and their engineers on how to design dikes. What's the best way to put the sandbags up there and keep dikes? We also work in the area of mediation of floods. So how do you know when it's safe to go back into a home? How to use a moisture reader to make sure that the moisture in the basement is done, and then other issues. We also work in the area of financial management, so working with families that have lost during the flood, how to get your finances in work. And we also, last year during the floods, that our 4-H, our youth development program, ran a number of camps for the kids that were affected with the flood. So we work in those areas. We worked with all the flood relief agencies in both Moorhead and Fargo, working closely with NDSU on providing the literature. We also had a call-in center for those that really did not know what agency to go to. So a number of different ways. Right now, our role within the Red River Valley right now is just meeting with the agencies and deciding who's doing what, and so that we're all very, very coordinated. And we also have our regional director there that is on the disaster committee, so that meets on a regular basis now as part of the planning for that. So that's just a number of things. We also have all of our information on our website, and that people can also access that.
Representative Egan, follow up. Okay. Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dean Durgan. First of all, I just want to comment on the plant breeding and research. The developments coming out of the university, I think, are phenomenal. We had mentioned the grapes earlier and the number of wineries springing up around Minnesota. And talking to some of the grape growers and the wine producers, they tell me that the folks in Iowa are probably surpassing us in wine production already using our own grapes. But I think that's fabulous that we have that. But I also wanted to talk about Dr. Spivak's bee research. And I think it's also important that we have that here in the upper Midwest in Minnesota. Do we have any breakthroughs coming on bee diseases, the sudden colony collapse circumstances that the beekeepers are frustrated with?
Dean Durgan.
Chairman, Representative, I also will let Dean Levine answer this. And yes, Marla is leading in some of those colony collapse issues and with disease issues. What Marla has found in working with others is that it's complicated. It's not just one issue that is happening. And her real breakthrough has been with the designing queen bees that are better equipped to handle those diseases, and also that are better able to have sanitized colonies. So the work continues. I think it's a very complicated issue, and we continue. Marla's been very good at finding other resources, especially federal grants, to match that. So Dean Levine, I don't know if you have additional updates on what Marla is doing.
Dean Levine.
The only other thing, she's been working a great deal with mites and the disease spread through mites. We're in the process of trying to raise funds for a bee laboratory that would be state-of-the-art to really look at these diseases in great depth.
Thank you.
And if I could, just one other thing.
Dean Durgan.
Chairman and Representative, one thing that Marla has also found for the health of the bees has been the lack of a food source in the fall. And so she is working with our Master Gardener program and our Master Naturalist program about what kind of plantings can be planted in the fall to get these bees through the winter. And that's also another thing that is complicating the issue of not having that natural food source in the fall.
Representative Mansky. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Ames, you briefly mentioned some challenges with funding the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. It's perhaps an issue we'll address at a later hearing, but I just want to make sure that we do get that information and get a good understanding of what's going on financially there. It's very important to our ag industry here in the state of Minnesota, and if you'd like to answer the question briefly now, I'd appreciate it.
So, Dr. Ames.
Chairman Hamilton, Representative, the challenge that's had occurred is that part of the core function of the diagnostic lab is very much integrated into the college, and so the college does provide both salary support as well as some research support for that. But the major cost and the major function of the diagnostic lab is to conduct disease surveillance, to do testing to help producers and veterinarians make day-to-day management decisions. And so it's one of the busier labs in the nation, and with that volume of testing going on, there is an increasing expense associated with just test reagents. Well, there may not be great inflationary pressures, you know, across the board. Certainly in that area, there's been very significant increases in test kits, test reagents. The cost of the facility, we now have a high security or a BSL-3 postmortem room that's online should we ever have the unfortunate situation of having diseases like high path avian influenza or other diseases like that hit the state, then we would have a safe place for those animals to be handled and worked on. So there's the increasing cost of the facilities, increasing cost of the reagents, increasing obviously cost of personnel, and at the same time, you know, that core function of the lab has been supported through a state special, which really has not been significantly increased since the mid-90s. And so that's really created our challenge where we have these growing expenses. And we've been able to meet some of that funding gap through fees, but we are now to the point where our fees are beyond any of the diagnostic labs in neighboring states. And so we're starting to impinge on the surveillance function of the lab by having our fees grow and grow. We've been very fiscally conscious within the lab. And really across the college, we've, with the decrease in state support, we've either reduced or eliminated 95 positions out of the college. So we're doing everything we can to control expenses. But this sort of funding gap that's resulted from sort of a static ag state special has really created the problem.
So, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Ames. This is a critical facility to not only to Minnesota agriculture, but to the population as a whole, and I look forward to trying to meet these challenges in as we go through our budget work later in the session. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Ames, maybe you commented on this. Roughly, what is the dollar amount for the operating debt on an annual basis for the diagnostic lab?
Well, when we lose the stimulus funding that we're getting from the university, and the college has been using some of its reserves as well to help the diagnostic lab, we're in the range of $3 million a year.
Okay. My other question, Dr. Ames, is what percentage of the testing is done that affects the domestic population, livestock, poultry, and what is in the wild, if you will, the deer population, et cetera. Do you have a percentage, a breakout of that?
Yeah, the vast majority, 95% of what we do is routine testing for what I've been calling production limiting and market limiting diseases. So We do these other functions. We're a full-service lab with quality control and quality assurance, so we're capable of taking on other testing, but the vast majority of what we do supports livestock.
All right. Thank you. Members, any other questions? No? Oh, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had to step out for a little bit, so I apologize if I've gone over, if this has been gone over already. But Mr. Chair and Ms. Durgan, it's good to see you again, Bev. One of the slides you had was on the Ag State Special funding for the last three biennium, and often what we hear at the about the legislature is that we're only cutting the increase or the a percentage of the increase. We're only cutting funding in the amount of an increase. And I'm looking at the bar chart where it looks like the cut in spending was not a cut in the increase, but it's actually a dramatic cut in the base, that it's significantly cutting. And I, is that correct?
Dean Durgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, nice seeing you again. Yes, during the last legislative session, at the end of the session, there was an allotment to the Ag State Special, and the final allotment was 12.7%. So that was an unallotment, a decrease to the base of what the Ag State Special was.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, so, and I thought you said something about it was, we're back at, or maybe it was Dr. Levine, back to the 1990 level, is that correct, or if I could get the actual year where we're kind of back to?
Dean Durgan.
Hamilton, Representative Hansen, yes, we are back to the level that the Ag State Special was in 1990.
Yeah. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I feel I've got to ask Dr. Levine a question since he's a constituent.
Please.
And just on the overall dollars on funding that comes in. So we have state dollars that come in, and then we have some tuition dollars that come in, and you know, you've got the kind of the spending side of it here, but I'm wondering, on when the money comes in, federal, state, where do you see shifts going on in terms of dollars supporting the programs in the college?
Dean Levine.
Mr. Chair, my representative. Yeah, we get around $20 million out of our $90 million of allotted types of money from tuition dollars. So we've been increasing our tuition dollars in order to handle some of the cuts. We're being entrepreneurial at that level. We also have around $70 million in outside grant funding. The state special truly funds a lot of our faculty salaries in the area of research. So it's a very, very critical source. And what we've had to do with these cuts is decrease the number of faculty we have.
Representative Hansen? Yeah. We do have a few more questions. I just want to remind members, we're not going to spend any more than 10 more minutes on this. We do have some other testifiers as well. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quickly, and for whoever would want to take this, are there national or federal accreditations that the lab achieves?
We'd like to handle that. Dr. Ames?
Chairman Hamilton, the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab is accredited by an organization called the American Association of Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory Diagnosticians. And so every 5 years, there is a review team that comes around and reviews the diagnostic lab and determines whether it is meeting standards. At the last review, and in the recent reviews, there's been a new challenge for most of the diagnostic labs, in that this accrediting body has added new standards around quality control and quality assurance. These standards are aimed at meeting the European kind of ISO 9000 standards, so that our products and the testing that's done in North America or the U.S. can have access to European markets. So that was a bit of an unfunded mandate, and at the last visit, the things that the accrediting body had concerns about were that we continue to grow our quality assurance and quality control program for the lab, and that we they also had great concern about the level of state support for the lab. And they, interestingly enough, have an accreditation standard around wanting at least 50% of the lab's budget to come
in the form of state support. We did have a subsequent visit, and they believe that our quality control, quality assurance programs are on par with what is needed for accreditation. And interestingly enough, the rest of the university now is starting to see if they can access our QA/QC programs in some of their other research programs, like the Diabetes Institute, for example.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, thank you for that. Just so I understand, you are in a position, or you have achieved ISO 9000?
Yes. I wouldn't say we've achieved ISO 9000, but we've achieved the equivalent of it as required by this accrediting body. So we are a fully accredited lab for another 5 years.
Yeah. Representative Purcell. Okay. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had stated, Dr. Ames, that the university holds the patent on PRRS vaccine, right? Just wondering, where do the royalties go to that? Do they go directly back to your part of the university, or just into a general fund?
Dr. Ames.
There's a set formula for how those are handled. Some of them are retained centrally to pay for the patent filing costs. And then they come back to the units, so shared between the college and the inventor and the unit that developed the product. So by coincidence, the director of the diagnostic lab was the inventor, and so he uses all of the patent money to support the diagnostic lab.
Follow up? Okay, seeing no other questions, we want to thank you for coming today and offering the testimony. You can understand, we fully are aware that you understand the importance of agriculture, and we'll continue going to bat for ag and in the university sector and everything else. We appreciate your testimony, and if we have any other questions, we know how to get a hold of you as well.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you
so much.
All right, next we do have members from the Morrow program. If you can please come on down front and state your name and who you represent for the record, please. So, Mr. Mathewitz, good to see you, my friend.
Good morning, Chair Hamilton. Good to see you as well. I'm Joel Mathewitz from Morgan, Minnesota, or Redwood County, and I'm here on behalf as chairman of the board of Morrow.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim O'Connor. I'm a farmer from Blooming Prairie, Minnesota. All
right. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you. We just wanted to take this opportunity and thank the U of M for allowing them to showcase one of the programs that they are in support of, the Morrow program. Morrow is Minnesota Agriculture and Rural Leadership. We are a public-private organization. We do act like a nonprofit, but we do work with both the University of Minnesota through the Extension Service and our program leader, and we also work with Southwest SMSU out of Marshall. They help facilitate and house our executive directors. We work with both university systems, and our goal then is to take rural leaders and egg producers and give them the additional training they need to continue to grow and to impact agriculture and industry. We've heard about a lot already this morning. Each year, Marl's been around since 2000. It's a two-year class. And so we select through an application process participants that go through a class over a two-year period. They'll meet 9 times in-state. They'll do a national trip to Washington, D.C., and an international trip somewhere. Each class has been selected and gone somewhere different. I had the great opportunity to go to South Africa. The last class had the chance to go to Cuba. The class of 32 today in the audience is class 6, so we're on our 6th class. About 2/3 of them are actively involved in production agriculture. The other third would be rural leaders who impact the industry in some shape or form. They are going to travel around the state of Minnesota in 9 in-state sessions. Typically, it's a two-day session, or a noon Wednesday to a noon Friday. And so they're going to learn about the diversity of Minnesota and the agriculture and all the different issues across the state, from the northern parts to the southern parts and the east and west. So it's really kind of broadens their horizons of what those issues are. They also will take a trip to Washington, D.C., and again, the international trip. It is a public-private partnership. We do fundraising. All of our costs are private donations that we go and request. Our annual budget is about $13,000 to $15,000 per participant. We ask the participant to pay a third, or $4,800 over their two-year period. The other money is raised through our executive director and donors and alumni to do that. So we are kind of a unique organization. I'll allow Jim, who is a current classmate, to talk a little bit more about the sessions he's been participating in.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Joel. I would like to thank this body for the opportunity to speak before you. And I'm somewhat in awe, and it's a convenience that 25 years ago, my parents sat before this very same body testifying during the farm crisis. I swore that's something I'd never do.
Well, welcome. And by the way, I love your tie, all right? Just
thank you. But anyway, we share the belief that we, the people, must participate and be involved in government. We have to speak up. We have to be involved. And if we don't bring the awareness to the issues, who will? My name is Jim O'Connor, as mentioned. My family and I farm near Blooming Prairie, down Steele County, Minnesota. We raise corn, soybeans, pork, bacon, ham. Part of our family farm has been in the family for over 150 years. The farm, a lot of things have changed, but the one thing that stays the same is the love of the land and the desire to pass that legacy on to future generations going forward. Our farm is not for sale at any price. It will be passed on to future generations to continue that legacy. My great-great-grandfather came from Ireland during the potato famine of the 1840s, and during a transatlantic crossing, going to a new country, a land of unknown, in search of a better life. Why did he leave? He could not survive standing in front of millions of people, starvation. If you're familiar with the potato famine, it was a very, very serious event that happened. He could not stand people starving to death. We in agriculture face many challenges. None of us is more important than educating the public about the farm of today. As a farmer, I am mindful of the most precious asset that we have in Minnesota: the land, the water, the air, and the animals that we raise, in the people. It is my sincere hope that they understand and they care and are aware of where their food actually comes from. My interest in the MARL program comes from a lifelong commitment of trying to at least try to educate the public just a little bit, make a difference. I know that because of this program, I now see through a different, the big picture of Minnesota. You know, in our own communities, we see this, but once MARL program has allowed me to open my eyes and see the big picture. I know my classmates and alumni and all the network of contacts can work together towards a common goal. We can make a difference, and we will make a difference. I believe in our children's future, and in closing, the promise of a better life. I will do my best to preserve our farming heritage passed on to me. I will not give up on telling the truth about agriculture. Food comes from farms. God bless America. God bless Minnesota, and God bless the farmers that feed us. Thank you.
Mr. O'Connor, you shouldn't have waited so long to come up and testify, my friend. I'm serious. You're right on. You're right on. We all have to do our part to share our story. We do have a few questions. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. O'Connor, thank you for coming again today. He has been here in the past, and so has his son served as a page during my term up here. And Mr. O'Connor is one of my constituents from down in my district, Blooming Prairie. And I do want to thank you for coming and for being involved in the program and the outreach, and for sharing your passion that you really do share beautifully with all of us. He has shared it with me often down in the district, and I'm so happy to have him here to share it with, to broaden that. And I know, to Jim, that you would invite any of us to tour your facility and in the future, and maybe when the weather's nicer, of course. But do come down to visit in my district down all through Blooming Prairie and see our ag land and our hard-working farm families, who are all very passionate, as Mr. O'Connor. And thank you for coming today.
Mr. O'Connor. Any follow-up questions there or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fritz. And building off of that, I would personally like to invite all of the population, not just the elected officials, to take a tour, see what goes on these farms, see what goes on at our farm, see what goes on in the farms of your respective districts and your constituents. Globally, see what goes on the farms. I mentioned the potato famine in Ireland. That had to do with absentee ownership. It was only a potato famine. They still had grain, they still had livestock, but they couldn't have it. It was all being sent back over to England. So be involved, be informed. You know, ask those questions of your farmers in your area, because you know your next meal might depend on what they have in their barn.
You're absolutely right. You have a wonderful representative as well up here, so doing a great job. You mentioned a international trip. Do you know where you're heading yet this year?
Mr. Chairman, no, Class 6 does not know where they are going, and nor will they until later on in their session.
I tried, everybody.
That will be a selection process. The board will go through a couple options with the help of staff and look at some places where they can be diversified in their leadership, and looking at the different extremes of agriculture. Representative Torkelson and I were in Class 4 together, and we had the opportunity to tour South Africa and to see the dynamics of policy. And the importance of food policy globally has definitely changed how I have an outlook on food and the importance of educating the consumer and where their food comes from.
Mm-hmm. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of information. I heard the class was headed for southern Iowa, but they found out it was not an international trip, so they can't go there.
Mr. O'Connor, any comments on that one? So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Torkelson, I'll plan on you driving and covering the cost of that trip to Iowa.
There you go. So, Mr. Mathewitz, do you know, Representative Torkelson, are there any other sitting members that went through the Marl program that you're aware of?
None?
Okay.
None at this time.
Might have to look into that there, Mr. Mathewitz. So, okay. Any other questions from the body here? I've seen it. Well, thank you so much for coming up and testifying. Again, you did a wonderful job. You're absolutely right. We have to continue telling our story. It's up to each and every one of us. So that, thank you.
Thank you.
And
enjoy
the day. Yes.
Thank all representatives.
So
we have,
let's see. Members, the next meeting will be next week, Tuesday, February 1st. And we're going to be taking up the Green Acres bills. However, the plan or the intent is to take testimony. And so I'm reaching out to everybody here the first day. If you have individuals back home, people that have experienced this, I'm sorry, can you hear me now? Yeah. If you have individuals that, the experts, that have been directly involved or affected, or maybe it's some assessors or whatever that you think should be part of this discussion, please get up with Ms. Harmon here so we can get them on the agenda, because my intent is to make sure that we fully vent this, and so that's why we're just taking all day next Tuesday to discuss this. And then we're going to, with the help of Representative Eakin, I want to visit with you as well as far as the next step then, after we hear the testimony. I would like to be able to take those bills up, whether it's Wednesday or Thursday of next week, and hear the actual bill, and then move them on to the appropriate committee afterwards. But I want to make sure that we get it fully vented here in the Ag Committee. So, again, if you know of anybody that you think would be instrumental in helping us navigate through this, please get those names to us, and we can get them on the testifying list. So, any other announcements? No? All right. With that, meeting's adjourned. Thank you.